If you want to turn in your copy of the scriptures or in your bulletin to Isaiah 12, that's our passage for this morning. We read a part of it earlier, but let me read the whole chapter to you now. You will say in that day, I will give thanks to you, O Lord, for though you were angry with me, your anger turned away that you might comfort me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and will not be afraid. For the Lord God is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. With joy, you will draw water from the wells of salvation, and you will say in that day, give thanks to the Lord, call upon his name, make known his deeds among the peoples, proclaim that his name is exalted. Sing praises to the Lord, for he has done gloriously. Let this be made known in all the earth. Shout, sing for joy, O inhabitant of Zion, for great in your midst is the Holy One of Israel. This is the word of the Lord. In the Spencer House, the best theological discussions come at bedtime, not at the dinner table or not at, you know, when we're trying to, you know, read scripture with them, and I'm trying to teach them the children's catechism, which I totally think everybody should get on board with, even adults. The children's catechism, great. We have copies if you want them. And there's music to go along with it. So anyway, there's the advertisement. But anyhow, that's not when the best theological discussions happen in our house. They usually happen at bedtime, usually right as I'm trying to leave the room, you know, like, okay, good night, hey, Daddy. And then I lie back down because it's going to be a while. And this past week, Eva was having a hard time kind of getting settled down, and she wasn't feeling that great. And we had just prayed that she would kind of feel better and be able to calm down and have a good night's sleep. And right after all that, she says to me, Daddy, how do we know that the Bible really tells us the truth? I mean, like, how do we know that when we pray, it's not just a trick, and that we're totally wrong? And I waited, you know. And then she says, I mean, I believe it, but how do we know? Now, that is a pastor's dream question, and it's a dad's horror, right? You know, because I'm thinking, oh, what great questions. Oh, I can't ruin my kid now. How do I give her the answer that will help her, one, kind of know why we trust the Bible and all of that, but also, and this is maybe me in this too, like my own stuff, like how can I give her an answer that will be a good foundation for more answers later on? You know, so I'm like twisting my brain up to try to give the perfect answer. And so I answered it in the way that I thought was best at the moment. But you know, it's a great question. You might be wondering, what was your answer? Let's have coffee. That's right. Or gelato, it's fine. But you know, if you hear those kind of questions, right? And my guess is that you might resonate with some of those questions. I mean, it's not like I don't believe, but how can I know? Especially for those of you that are in the middle of difficulty. Like things that are facing you, the questions that you have, not just about theology, but about life, which, I mean, good theology kind of deals with the real stuff of life. It's not just the sort of mental stuff that's off in the air somewhere. It's about reality, right? So you might resonate with those questions. And I would imagine that the faithful in Israel that were receiving this prophecy would have similar questions. It would resonate with them because, you know, if you were one of the original hearers of this prophecy, you're hearing this prophecy as the Assyrians are knocking on the door. And the Assyrians had a pretty solid reputation for mowing down countries and leading people off literally with fish hooks in their mouths. So if you're hearing this prophecy about salvation and the great thanks that you're going to give, you might be going, huh, but what about those guys that have sieged the city? My guess is that they had similar questions like, okay, how do we know? I mean, we want to believe, but it's a hard thing to believe in the middle of what we're dealing with. In this particular chapter in Isaiah, it ends this first section of the prophecy. Isaiah has given a lot of pretty serious words about what the Lord's going to do in history. And there are also some of the great, all the Christmas, you know, passages are in there about the virgin that's going to give birth to a child, and for unto us a child is born, and all of that. And then in chapter 11, we get to the shoot of Jesse, right? This bloom that's going to come out of the stump of Jesse, and it's this messianic promise. And in chapter 11, it starts talking about that day, this historical season or this historical moment when the Messiah is going to show up, and all these promises of the prophecies that have been, you know, for all those chapters before, they're going to come to bear. And then we get to our passage, and it says, you will say in that day. That day is referring to the coming of this Messiah, this promised Savior. Now, when we get to chapter 12, it's in that day that the people, they're going to be able to give thanks in the way that this chapter refers to. When the Messiah comes, when this act of salvation takes place, you're going to just give thanks. Now, if you're the original hearer, you're looking forward to that day in the future, right? You're kind of looking over the heads of the Assyrians. Yeah, there it is. And you're looking forward to this day when you're going to give thanks. But you know, we have a different vantage point, right? The Assyrians aren't knocking on the door trying to siege us. We're not looking forward to the coming of the Messiah. We're actually living in that day. The age of the Messiah. Jesus has come. The shoot of Jesse has arrived. His reign has begun. That day has started, even as we wait on the final consummation of it, to be sure. But Jesus did come. Jesus did die on the cross. Jesus did rise from the grave. Jesus has ascended to the right hand of the Father, and he sits there on his throne, reigning. That day has come. And you know what that means? That means that day of thanksgiving has come. This call to thanksgiving is for now. Now, some of you might be thinking, so you clearly do not know what I'm dealing with, and you must not watch the news. Because to think about that day now, right? Well, it may be true that I don't know everything that you're dealing with, although I do watch the news, so that part, I've got that down. But it may be that you're dealing with some really, really difficult stuff, and your heart may be really, really heavy. But I would urge you this morning that this idea of giving thanks now, looking at what Jesus has done, is actually, it's not just theater. It's actually a benefit to your doubt. It's a strength in the middle of your questions, those same kinds of questions that Eva was asking me. Giving thanks, the very act of it, it's a scaffold to your faith. And I think that it's intended to be that. So I think that as we look at this passage this morning, what I want us to see is that this passage provides us a way to lean into our questions, to lean into our doubts. I mean, because, can we just go ahead and say, I mean, we live in a culture that sort of biases doubt, right? I mean, to doubt is, nobody really knows anything. It's sort of the way it is. And what I want to say is there's a huge difference between doubt and between humility. We want to be humble. We want to be honest about what we know and we don't know. But can we not celebrate doubt? Because what we want is we want to have confidence, a right, proper confidence in what Jesus has revealed to us. And I think that as we give thanks, we actually can get some of that. It's a scaffold to our confidence. So let's look at how that shows up in this passage. First of all, notice with me that in verses 1 and 2, this giving of thanks that Isaiah is telling us is going to happen, this giving of thanks is an individual thanks. In fact, the you in verse 1 is a singular you, right? So in that day, you individual, you are going to give thanks. And you might notice that, I mean, it goes on, maybe you didn't or whatever, but it even says, I will say, right? So you will say in that day, and then in the quote, said, I will give thanks. This is an individual giving their thanks. And what for? Well, this individual giving of thanks is because, well, you know, the truth is God was rightly angry. He had a reason to be upset. Now, we might, if you're theologically astute, you might want to pontificate. I like to pontificate, so maybe you do too. You might want to pontificate about all that Adam did. You know, this all this sin is all Adam's fault, you know, so there it is. But I just want to say, like, you participate in it too, right? We can't just go, oh, Adam, darn you, Adam, for all that you've done. We also perpetuate the results of what Adam did. And I know that some of you have experienced grave injustices in your life. Grave injustices that you bear no responsibility for. Did everybody hear me say that? I realize that. But even you have added your own injustices. Like, none of us get off scot-free in this. You see, in that sin that we participate in, it's a personal offense to God. This God who loves us and calls us to live lives of love and holiness with him. Right? So our sin is it's a personal offense to God, but it's also a problem of justice in that it wreaks havoc on the good world that God made. That when we sin, when we disobey God, the effects of that play out in our relationships with one another, with our relationship with ourselves, the structures of culture and society, even the environment. I mean, all of this stuff is, our sin's making a wreck of stuff, and it makes sense that God would be angry. However, God didn't stomp off in a huff, right? He didn't, like, take his stuff and get out of here and pout. Because God's desire, this passage tells us, was to show mercy. All right, look in verse 1 again. I'll give thanks to you, O Lord, for though you were angry with me, your anger turned away that you might comfort me. God's desire was not to stay angry, to stay at odds with the people and with all that he made. His desire was to be reconciled to it. And that's exactly what he's done. God didn't just go off mad. He dealt with the problem. He acted in a saving power by not dismissing sin, but by truly dealing with sin through Jesus. Through Jesus' sacrificial death on the cross, God himself has become our salvation so that we don't have to be afraid of his power, right? When we see the might and the power of God, we don't have to cower in fear because his might and his power is on display for us. God's might and his strength and his power is a comfort to us. Kind of like the dad that shows up, you know, every kid, I guess most kids, I think, Lily sometimes, Dad, you're so strong. And I'm like, I'm really not, but thank you so much. You know, but like when I show up, I can do stuff. You know, she doesn't look at me and go, wow, Dad's bigger than me, I'm horrified. You know, she looks at me because Dad can come and do stuff, right? And when we see the might and the strength and the power of God, for those of us that believe, we don't have to be afraid of him. He comes to comfort, to deal with, yes, to deal with our sin, but also to comfort us. And that's a great salvation, isn't it? I mean, isn't that something that we could delight in? I think that's something that we shouldn't just think, yes, that goes in the good category mentally, but something to truly delight in, where our affections are changed by the glory and the greatness of what God has done. Now, having said all of that, none of that is groundbreaking for you. Please tell me you've heard me say stuff like that before, because I know I have, and I hope you hear it. This is not new stuff for you, that Jesus saves, that God saves. But what does that have to do with our questions and our doubts? These verses, I suggest to you, provide a response to those very basic ideas. That is to say that individuals need to talk about God's salvation. That's in verse 1. And individuals also need to enact their trust in God, right? We need to be saying, I'm thankful. But we also need to be acting as though God's not mad at us anymore. Trusting that. I mean, look in verse 2. Behold, God is my salvation. This is what we're supposed to say. I will trust and I will not be afraid. For the Lord God is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. Right? We're supposed to be talking about our things, but we're also supposed to be acting in our lives in a way that doesn't assume that God's just looking to pull the rug out from underneath us. Listen, if you're a believer, God's not out to get you. Right? But sometimes we act as though he is. And we sort of were timid and we're fearful and we're afraid. But as we speak our things and as we begin to act in our lives on this idea that God's actually for us, then what we do is we begin to build this sense of credibility of God's promises. Right? Yes, I'm afraid, but look what God has done. Right, he's done this before. Look, I'm afraid, or maybe I'm seeing the brokenness of my own sin, but when I speak out my thanks for God's salvation, I'm remembering, yeah, okay, wait, God forgives. Right? As we speak out these things, as we enact our trust in him, again, we see sort of a scaffolding being built for us as we live our lives, even in the midst of our questions and doubts. So I guess I want to ask you this morning, when's the last time that you actually spoke out your thanks to God for what he's done? Because I suspect that there is a correlation between silent thanklessness and doubt. But let's notice one other thing here. Look at verses 3 to 6. Now, this is a call to a corporate thanksgiving for God's salvation. If we get to verse 3 there, with joy you will draw water, that's actually a plural you, so the person has shifted. It's been an individual before, and now it's shifting to a corporate plural you. That is to say, not only are individuals to see their faith emboldened as they speak out like as you speak out your thankfulness to God, but also as a people, as God's people speaking out their thanks, we're to see, or you're to see, however you want to handle that, we're going to see our faith together strengthened as we draw refreshing water from the wells of salvation. That's a great image, isn't it? I mean, it's a really great image if you're really thirsty. It's a really great image if you live in a place that doesn't have much water. This idea of reaching down and drawing up water from the wells of salvation. I mean, that's part of what our thanks and praise does. It's to reach down and to grab a hold of this refreshment. Now, we've talked before about how praise, our corporate praise as far as our worship together, we've talked about this idea that praise sort of builds a sense of strength, or it helps us to remember what God has done. But there's actually a wrinkle in this text that I want to make sure that you catch this morning. I had a great time contemplating it this week. And it's this. The wrinkle, if you follow in our English translation, the quotation marks, you get a sense of what the wrinkle is here. Because notice, so matching the "you will say" of verse 1, verse 4 gives us another "you will say," right? So we saw in verse 1, "you will say in that day" singular. And here there's the "you will say" plural. But notice what the "you will say" is saying. The "you will say" is showing God's corporate people calling out thankfulness from other people, right? "You will say in that day," and then you get, here's the quotes, "you will say, you give thanks." Does that make sense, what we just did there? This is God's corporate people going to other people and saying, "Hey, you give thanks too. You call in the name of God. You sing praises. You shout and sing for joy." There's a ministerial aspect to thankfulness. That as we delight in God's salvation, we're to go to other people and say, "You." I mean, like, to go to Andy and say, "Andy, give thanks. Jay, give thanks. This is part of our work." And I'm not going to say everybody's name, but you can fill in your blank here, right? Simon, okay. But the ministerial aspect of thankfulness here is for us as a corporate body to go to people and say, "Hey, you give thanks. God is great. His salvation is amazing. We're drawing water from the wells of it." What we're doing, what I think this is calling us to, is to make room for, in our relationship with others, to make room for thankfulness so that their faith can be strengthened, so that their confidence can be bolstered, so that their sense of God's great salvation can grow, and so that their joy can be full. It's something like, you may have seen the commercial, maybe it's a Toyota commercial or something, but the way it works is at the very beginning of the commercial, this guy gets in the car and he syncs up, I'm sure, his you know, wireless phone to play the car, and it shows he's playing the Billy Idol cover of the old Shondells song, "Money, Money," right? You guys, you know, "Here she comes now," sing, everybody, okay, you're on board. All right, so but you in the commercial, he's driving along, cranks up the radio, pulls up to a stoplight, you know, and other people are listening in. So he gets to the chorus, you know, "I said, yeah," and then he points. And they go, "Yeah," and then he drives along, "Yeah, yeah." So, and this is how the commercial goes along. And by the time, apparently, the whole town is just singing, "Money, Money," and it's a wonderful mayhem, right? That's what we're called to do, right? You see, often we talk about Thanksgiving in this sort of corporate, like, worship sense. And that's right, I think. But I think that we also need to have a sense that there's this expands that a bit further. So that in our lives, as we rejoice in what God has done, we're to go to other people and say, "I said, yeah. Yeah." See, that's how it works. I really think that's what's going on in this passage. That we as a people should be calling, like making room for and calling for thanks and praise from other people so that we can point and cue and say, "Listen, God's done great things, Daryl. Give thanks. Here's a chance," right? For us to go to people and say, "Yeah," and hear them say, "Yeah," back. But, you know, sometimes when we talk about discipleship, which I like to do, we often talk about growing in our knowledge of our understanding of salvation, and we need to do that. But I also think that as we talk about growing in discipleship, we need to grow in this sense, too, this sense of responding rightly to what God has done. When we talk about discipleship, we shouldn't neglect encouraging each other towards a right response to salvation, which is to give thanks. I mean, it raises the question, of course, how do we do that? How do we make room in our relationships for thankfulness? How can we as believers kind of roll down the windows and point and say, yeah, okay, you're done with that. But it was fun for the moment, all right? I really liked it. I have a few quick ideas that I think will be helpful in that regard. And the first is this. This is the easy one. If we're going to make room for thankfulness in relationships, you know what we have to have? Relationships. Right? We have to actually make room for people. And I don't really know any other way to say that. If we're going to grow in this area, we have to make room for people and relationships. There's just no way around it. Now, the second thing, though, is this. I think that we really need to work hard in our relationships, and hear me carefully here, to not bias the brokenness of the world against the beauty of the world. Listen, the world is a broken place, and we all know there's ample evidence of that. But you know, the world's also a beautiful place because Jesus has acted. Jesus has dealt with sin. And it's easy for us, if you watch the news, it's easy to forget that, but there's really great stuff going on around the world. Like, there are people doing things around the world where Jesus is being glorified and the church is growing and expanding. Is there really difficult stuff in the world? Oh, yeah. But I think that sometimes we bias the brokenness of the world and kind of forget that, look at what Jesus has done. Let's be thankful for that without dismissing the brokenness of the world. So I think that we need to work really hard in our relationships not to bias brokenness over against the beauty of the world. Because the gospel has been proclaimed. And sometimes we're so focused on the brokenness around us, and it's there. Sometimes we get so focused on the brokenness around us that we miss this persistent and pervasive provision of God. The way that God, even in the middle of brokenness, He is acting. He is doing stuff. Sometimes it's hard stuff. But He is acting. But finally, related to both of those things, I think that we need to be careful in our relationships with one another, especially when it comes to accountability, which is something that I think is really important in discipleship, that we're sort of in it with each other, that we hold each other accountable, that we point out things we need to point out, and we receive from each other humbly. That's important. But I think this, sometimes in our discipleship and in our relationships, we can bias problems and not thankfulness. So that when we get together and we want to talk about life, sometimes I think there's a lot of pressure, like, okay, what is wrong with my life so I can tell somebody about it, right? They're asking me how you're doing, and it's almost as though if I say, you know, I'm doing pretty well, that it's like a substandard answer. But you know what? Sometimes we're doing great. And in those times, we need to say, thank the Lord for what He's doing in my life. Now, I'm not, again, don't hear me saying something I'm not. We should be able to be open and honest about our struggles and our problems and have people on our side and all of that stuff. We need that. I'm not dismissing that by any stretch. But I also think that we need to be able to be honest with each other about our joys and the things that we're glad about. So that when we get together and even in those times we're digging into our lives, which we need to do, you're going to see problems. It's there. We're broken. But I think that we need to be careful not to so bias the problems that we miss that, wait, but I do have some things to be thankful for. Maybe they're tucked away underneath some very hard things. But I wonder what would happen as it relates to our doubts and our questions if, as a people, we went after calling forth thanksgiving from each other. Again, not to dismiss problems, not to say, okay, who cares about that, you know, but to say, that is really tough, and I'm with you on that. But let's find a way to be thankful. Let's find a nugget that we can hang on to in the middle of our challenges and say, look what the Lord has done. I think that if we did that, we would be strengthened. So I'm going to encourage you this week, again, not to dismiss the challenges that you're having. And as you talk to each other, not to like, well, I'm doing fine, whatever. Now, I'm not saying paper over or sort of, you know, like whitewash problems. But what I am saying is let's encourage each other this week to find something that we can say, I give thanks to God for this. So maybe this week, as you're meeting with the people that you meet with, and I hope that you meet with people and talk to people throughout the week, maybe what you can do is you can ask that question, what are you thankful for? What is God doing that you can rejoice in today? I think if we did that, it would give us perspective in our struggles, and it would strengthen our faith in this God who does so mightily save us. Now, I decided this week that we would do something a tad bit different. There we go. I got all the vowels right. A tad bit different. You know, usually I like to end a sermon with like some sort of illustration or sermon that wraps it all up at the end. And if I can do that in a rhetorically nice way, then that just makes me feel good, right? But you know what I decided this week was that I'm not going to write the end of the sermon, because I want you all to write the end of the sermon. And now you're getting really nervous maybe, but here's the thing. Before we go to the Lord's table to give thanks, I've told you before, that's what Eucharist means, is to give thanks, right? And we're going to give thanks for all that Jesus has done. But before we do that, you know, I'm trying to get out this week, we need to be a people that are thankful. Not just in a sense of like, go do your duty, go be thankful, but in the sense of we've got things to be thankful for, and it's an encouragement to us, and it's a strength to us in the midst of our real problems and brokenness. And I thought, you know, there's not a story that would pull it all together any better than this, you giving thanks. So you might have noticed that this week we didn't do the open thou my lips, O Lord part, and this is why, because that's, you're going to end the sermon. So here's what we're going to do, and I've planned on, you notice I've ended a little bit quicker than normal, one whole page sooner, huh? And I did that, I planned it on purpose. You've got 3 pages, you've got to get it in there. But I did it on purpose so that right now we can give thanks. So I can say to you, I said yeah, and you can actually say something besides just yeah.
Yeah,
there we go. So here's the plan. Instead of open thou my lips, O Lord, I'm going to let this just be as awkward as it's going to be. And I want to give you a chance to, this is like old my old Nazarene background. It's time to testify. I need a hanky. It's a chance for you to say, this is what I'm thankful for. You know, usually we do open thou my lips, O Lord, and we have a chance to say a quick word of thanks, but I'm going to open up the time just a little bit here. So, here's what you can do, because in case it's still fuzzy, this is a chance for you to stand up and say, you know, I'm thankful for this. All right? So there you go. Let the awkwardness begin. I can't wait.